Session number 13123.
Mr. Cyril Mount, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Mount?
I was born in Liverpool and West Kirby in 1920, October 14th, 1920.
And what did your father do for you?
And at that time, my father was at sea. He'd been in the Navy during the war, First War, and he'd come out of the Navy and was still going to sea, and I guess I didn't really see him until he was about two.
How many were there in the family?
Well, it was only me at the time, and my sister came 4 years later.
And was it? Did you have a comfortable childhood? I mean, were you well provided for and the rest of it?
Initially, yes, there was a sort of, you know, feeling of luxury, if you, or semi-luxury. When I was young, I was taken around to various... I was quite a pretty little kid with curly hair, and I was toted around by my mother, who was, you know, virtually a grass widow at the time, to visit sort of, you know, old ladies and very, what I thought was quite posh sort of parlours. You know, well, there's one had a parrot on a stand, and you know, I can remember being fed bananas, and which were luxuries even then, and being fussed over generally, yes. And I guess when I was about two, this huge red-bearded man came into my life, and I was immediately kicked out of my mother's bed where I used to sleep and play on her dressing table with scents and powders and things, and put into this rather gloomy back room. The sun used to come in the front room, and never in the back room. And
Did you find that difficult?
I think that's something I actually worked on in a therapy session many years later. this rejection thing, you know. And he was very fierce. He was very strict because he'd gone to sea when he was 12, apparently. He'd on sort of a sailing ship, and he'd had rope's ends around his arse, you know, sort of, and he thought that was the right way to bring. And his father was very fierce, and there were several brothers, all seagoing people. So I guess he was unnecessarily tough on me. He had all my curls cut off, remember that? Which,
did you find your sort of middle childhood a bit difficult, from two onwards difficult then?
It was difficult, but I don't suppose any more difficult than most kids at that time. I think in that area of Liverpool, I think everybody was treated quite strictly. You know, you got beat around the head from policemen, and you accepted that, you know, and of course... Kids were really reasonably well behaved. Yeah.
Did your father stay once he was back in about 1922?
Yes, he got a job on the Mersey Docks and Harbour Board. And what did he? No, sorry, not then. He got a job on the docks, working on the docks, after he came back on land. And then we moved house. It was an old Victorian house we were in then, and we moved house to a new house in a sort of what was a pretty countryfied area.
Whereabouts?
A place called Littleland. It was surrounded by farms, but now it's a complete hideous place. And it was quite nice. There were lots of fields to play in. And that part of my childhood was okay. I mean, I got beaten three times a week, but I mean, that was, you know, everybody got beaten.
So what about your school? What was your first school?
First school was just across the road from this old Victorian house in Gloucester Road. And it was quite pleasant. I still remember sort of coke stove and hyacinths on the window ledge, and you know, being thrilled by the letters that we had to copy. You know, I'd still get a thrill when I sort of see a letter E with a ball at the bottom. You know, and there's some nice memories of junior school. But I was always, I think, visually inclined, if you like, and dreamy. And you know, the best thing we ever did was making a Hiawatha thing on a wardrobe mirror with the river and sort of plasticine trees and canoes and things. You know, I think that was so exciting, doing this project. You know.
How did you do at the other non-art subjects?
I don't think I was very good, really, at writing. Maybe yes, but not. No, I wasn't very mathematical.
How did your father feel about this artistic side?
I think there was. There was encouragement from aunts and grandma over the water in the Wirral, you know, where I was born. And, I don't think my father did actually draw himself. There's a picture hanging up of two horses, pencil drawing of two horses, which was sort of dominated the room. It was one of the few bits of art hanging around the house. Anyway. Yeah, I don't think he was anti, no, but the anti bit came later when I got a scholarship when I was...
So yeah. That was your first, the Gloucester Road sort of junior school? And then
yes, and then there was a brand new secondary school in this, near this brand new house in Littleland.
How did you do there?
Well, everything was new. I can still remember the smell of new desks and everything. You know, it was a brand new school, and we had an art master who, he was a bloke called Horton. He was very tough. He made us draw with pencils, hard HB pencils, and you had to sort of, first, at every art lesson, you had to draw freehand a half-inch border all around that piece of paper that you had. And if you wobbled at all or got it out, you had your knuckles racked with this hard ruler. And then he piled up the cones and the spheres and the pyramids, and you had to draw these things absolutely accurate. And I was very good at doing this. And above the blackboard was a picture of Sir Walter Raleigh pointing two kids pointing out to sea. That was that time what I remember of that. Oh, later on I was allowed to use poster paints, and not because I was good. I was doing pictures for the history master and geography, and I was doing extra work. And I was,
so you started to stand out for it.
I started to stand out, yeah, as being sort of. Talented, that's the word.
He was a strict art. I mean, that's the sort of technical skills of drawing I think you're talking about.
But that was art in those days, yeah.
Was there any encouragement for a sort of any interpretive sort of thing? Or
No. There was nothing at all that where you were encouraged to do anything for yourself. Every week it was drawing the cones and cylinders and cubes.
Did that stand you in good stead, do you think?
I think so, yes. It gave me a steady hand. We did lettering as well. We did Roman lettering. We had to draw that freehand and then line it up. And, yeah.
Well, any other subjects take your interest at secondary school?
History, geography. And science. Yeah, I used to like the science lab. It was a brand new science lab. And, yeah.
What about sport?
I was quite good in goal and played football. But I wasn't. I'm not a sportsman. I don't think I've ever been a sportsman. Played hockey when we went to India, but that's, yeah.
So you were progressing through your secondary school. You mentioned a scholarship. When did that come about? How did that come about?
Well, I sat for this exam, this test, an art test, and I got a scholarship to go to the junior art school in Ballyhale Road, Bootle.
And what age was that?
And I was 14.
So that would be the normal school leaving age?
Well, I wasn't 14, sorry, I was 13. And I was due to leave school in that October. Well, I suppose in the July when we broke up. And I was due to take the scholarship from the October. And instead of which, my old man became ill, and I had to go out and work. He was on the dole, and they were buying this house. I don't know how much a week it was, but I had to go get a job. And I resented that very badly. And there was a whole succession of jobs after that. Edinburgh
How long
jobs.
Would the course have been for at the art school?
It would have continued until I was 16. And then I would have gone into the big art school in Liverpool.
Now, so you went into a variety of jobs. What sort of jobs were they mainly?
Errand boys mainly.
The local shops?
Yeah. Started off with the butchers, which that was the first one. Lasted a fortnight. Got the... Saturday morning, one of those bikes with a little wheel in front and a great big basket, and loaded this high with legs of lamb and sausages and God knows what, and the wheel got stuck in the tram, back wheel got stuck in the tram line in Waterloo Road, and I just wobbled and skidded, and everything went all over the road, and of course the horses and carts and the lorries didn't stop, and they just trampled all this meat into the... I rescued what I could and went back, wheeled the bloody bike back with a buckled wheel, and... I just got beaten all around the shop with this butcher and told to get out, no money. And that was the end of that job. And I just got another butcher's job. And then I got the sack from there because I had a pair of breeches from a jumble sale, riding breeches, and these socks. And no, I had leggings, black leggings on, that's why. Because it was getting winter by then. And I started nicking sort of pounds of liver and sausages and things. And dropping them down these britches. And one night I was stopped in the sergeant court and got the sack from there. And it was a dairy, which was great because they had a horse, and we used to trot around the different streets, and then we'd just go out to Blundell Sands, and then when the churn was empty, we'd canter all the way back and down these sort of empty roads at 6 o'clock in the morning. That was great. I loved that, and I fell in love with horses at that point. We used to come back and groom, and then help with the bottling, putting caps on the bottles. Yeah, they were quite nice days. I don't think I resented all this. I seem to have an appetite for just new experiences, you know.
But you wanted to go to art school.
But I wanted to draw. I kept on drawing, but I wanted to be... Yeah, I felt frustrated because that hadn't happened. But then I realised that then I was needed to go out and work and to bring some money in. Because every penny I earned was handed over.
Now, what about... Were you in any... Before... any boys' societies or groups outside of school?
No. No.
So you were working... What these various jobs. Yeah. And then you joined the army eventually. How
yeah, well, one job was really hideous. That was working in the... it's still going strong. The Hygiene Cabinet Factory. And that was right along Scotland Road. And I used to have to ride in, start off in the cracking frost and the knuckles bleeding, and ride all the way into this horrible place where my job was hanging the little ventilators they have on these kitchen cabinets onto a row of hooks and carefully dropping them into a narrow trough of cellulose and out again and into a drying cupboard. So all day long I was breathing this bloody stuff, and I used to go home with about a quarter inch of cellulose around each finger and spent the rest of the evening sort of peeling it off. That lasted for about 3 months, and I think that was really became very, very hateful. And then my father got me a job as an office boy in the Mersey Docks and Harbour Board building on the pierhead in Liverpool. And yeah, he was working then. He started working.
Back at work.
Yes,
again.
But he kept me working too. And he got me this job, and I used to have to go down to the pierhead onto the liners with the big japanned boxes with charts in. Because it was in the Marine Surveyors Department, and that thrilled me too. Because I was watching these guys sort of putting watercolour on the sandbanks on the Mersey on the charts. You know, they had actual watercolours on the desk. You know, it's great. But I spent longer and longer down on the boat to start talking to somebody who'd been to Rio de Janeiro or something, and they would, I'd forget all about. I had to be back in the office. And I'd get back in the office. It'd be about 5 to 5, and the porter there would then clap me around the ear but eventually it got too much for them. I was a dreamer, really, and I suppose and I got the sack, and I didn't know what to do because I was scared to go home and tell them I'd been sacked. So I went up to the Navy recruiting office. I thought I'd join the Navy because my father's in the Navy, and I think it was something to do with teeth. I hadn't enough teeth or something. My eyes were all right by then because I'd been wearing glasses for a squint, but they might as well. They checked, did a quick check, and they said, "No, you're not good enough for the Navy." So I went to the Army recruiting office, and I said I wanted to join a regiment with horses. So they said, "Well, you can join the Royal Horse Artillery as a trumpeter."
How old were you at this point?
I was then 15.
So that would be 1935.
Yes.
And did you know anything about the Royal Horse Artillery?
No, nothing. But I...
Did they give you a proper medical at the arm?
They give you a quick medical, and they didn't even ask your age. I mean, I could really have gone in as 18 and said I was 18 or 17 and a half. And they wouldn't have checked, I think, in those days. I was so anxious to get...
Did you look older?
I was tall, yes. I was getting on for 6 foot then, and...
Which recruiting office was it?
It was London Road, Liverpool. Yeah. God.
And what did they actually... They signed you up?
So, well, no, they signed me up, but they said they had to have parents' permission. So I went home and I said, "I've been sacked from the Mersey Docks and Harbour Board and I've joined the army." And they said, "You bloody..." So I got the automatic belting for getting sacked, and then... So you're not joining any bloody army, you're going to get another job. So I said, "Well, if you don't let me join the army, I'm going to I'll run away to sea. And that was quite a common thing in those days. People did actually run away to sea without any questions asked. You could serve before the mast and...
The merchant marine, you mean?
The merchant, yeah. There were lots of boats in Liverpool and you could go on, you know. So it was a ding-dong for quite a while, and threats and counter-threats, and eventually...
What did your mother think?
Oh, she was sort of terrified of the old man. And I think that's what I thought, but I realised later that she was the strong element. When she died, I had no feelings at all, actually. I'm sorry to say about this, because I feel that she was the dominant force there, although he was the one who administered the good hidings. But she was the one who used to tell me, you know, I'd done this and this and this. And then when he came home, and he was on shift work, and he just sort of lay into me, you know, because mother had told him I'd been misbehaving. No, she didn't take any part in it. She wanted me to go and work, yes, but I stuck my heels in on this one, and eventually they let me go, and I went down to Woolwich in January 36.
So they signed the consent form?
They signed the consent, yeah, and I enrolled as a boy in Woolwich Boys Depot.
They actually had a boys' depot at the
time. Yeah, boys' depot, yeah, and that was really good. You know, you just didn't stop moving from 6 in the morning to 6 at night.
I'll go through the routine, but what about your reception there? I mean, how did they take you into the army? I mean, you arrived as a callow young lad, so to speak.
Oh, into the recruiting office?
No, into when you got to the boys' depot at Woolwich.
Oh, from the moment you stepped inside the gate, it was sort of double, you know. It was great. I enjoyed that because I was fit then, and I got even more fit, and it was sort of... PT, you know, you ran up the hill, up Shooter's Hill and Woolwich to the top and back again, and then you change into riding again and ran up again to the riding school in that direction.
So they ran you about?
Yes, yes.
What about giving you your uniform?
Haircut and everything. You know, you got your hair cut bloody short and you got kitted out with uniform. With
what kit did they give you?
Breeches, putties, spurs, boots. But everything had to be, within a week, had to be sort of gleaming. And there was a tailor there. You could have your stuff sort of tailored. And we looked bloody smart, you know. You learned how to put putties on.
Did you find that difficult?
No, I was lapping it up because it was...
No, I mean the putty putting on.
No. No, you just had to put an inch apart and you wound them. And you blanked the tapes at night and hung them up. And oh, I was very proud of my... I always have been of how I looked, you know. And
so what was your what was your accommodation like within the boys' depot?
They're just barrack rooms, highly polished floors, about something like 16 kids in the room, stove in the middle, beds all round, four sides.
What were the beds like?
Just iron beds with three biscuits, you know, three Koya hard biscuits, which had to be made up. And some people actually sort of slept on the floor, you know, the night before a kit inspection, because everything had to be absolutely immaculate. And they'd iron all these sheets and put a bit of starch on the front, so in between the blankets, there was blanket sheet, you know, and then a blanket all round. And they'd crease the blanket at the side as they ironed. So they'd sleep with a greatcoat on the floor that night, you know, so we wouldn't disturb this. They were the idiots, of course, who did that.
You didn't go that far?
No, I didn't go that far.
How did you... I mean, in the barrack room. How did you get on with the other lads?
Very well, really.
From the start?
Yeah.
Were they from the same sort of background as yourself?
They came from all over England. Some of them had come from quite good homes, but there was a hell of a recession on, you know, in the mid-30s. And I think a lot of them had seen no future in just doing mundane jobs like, you know, running errands or working as an office boy or something. And they, yeah, joined for the excitement, I suppose.
Was there any bullying element amongst them, or were they?
Yeah, a certain amount. Mm.
What forms did it take?
It was never... I don't think it was any more, say, than a public school. I regarded the whole thing as almost being like a public school, because we had education as well. We'd double down the hill with our books and down to the school, which was outside the barracks on the other side.
So it was just sort of the bullying wasn't terribly serious to you.
The bullying was not. No, it wasn't vicious. It's nothing like what I've read about recently that's been going on. It wasn't sort of sinister.
Did anyone pick on you?
Yeah. I mean, there was a case of eventually sort of somebody had to be cock of the barrack room, you know, and I fought it out with an Irish guy, and I won in the end. And then, but because I was, I think, a little bit different, they didn't give me a stripe. They gave this other guy called Bastable a stripe, and nobody liked this guy. And one day, we grabbed him and blindfolded and held him down. And and somebody put a red hot poker in the stove and waved it in front of his eyes. And then we blindfolded him, and it was about 10 of us holding him down. See, and then we picked up a cold poker and we put it on his stomach. See, and he screamed. And, he thought he was being burned, but then he. He went and reported us to the Sergeant Widdicombe, that's right, he came from Somerset, and he went to the captain, and of course I was regarded as the ringleader of all this. So, we got birched, that was it, yeah. So I was...
How did they administer that?
There was a sergeant, there was a Bombardier Bastable, there was a kid, he was a boy Lance Bombardier, and they stood by, and... it was the officer who administered it, the birching. You got six. It wasn't a birching, it was a cane. Like at school, on your bare arse. Yeah, how much sadism was involved there, I don't know, but you know, at that time I was quite innocent. But that evening in the dinner queue, I sort of grabbed this guy and I thumped him for reporting us. And of course, then I was treated as having struck an NCO, even though he was only a boy NCO. I had struck a NCO, so I was slammed into the guard room in the top barracks. I was marched up to the top barracks guard room, and I was given 7 days in the guard room to teach me a lesson.
What did they do with? I mean, what was your routine in the guard room?
Oh, it was great. Fun. Yeah, because
why?
Because they were the big lads, the gunners, you know, up at the top depot, and there were different guards coming on every 24 hours, and they thought it was great that I'd smacked bloody NCO. So they were giving me fags and chocolate, and sort of, I just had to sort of read in this cell, you know.
So if there was any bullying, it sounds as if you were fairly well.
I wasn't a bully.
I know what you mean. So. Yeah. It was just sort of normal schoolboy, almost.
It was, yes.
Fights and trouble, nothing too serious.
No, in the end, we were kept on the go so hard.
I'll come to what you actually did.
Yeah.
What about did you have an NCO in the room with you?
No, only this only boy the NCO, yeah. But they were very, very near, these other, you know, the senior NCOs.
Now, what about, we might as well look at a day's routine of training then, and perhaps cover the things that you did during.
Yeah.
What time would the morning start for you?
Well, after a while, we all had learned to blow reveille and various other calls. So there was a rota of who had to get up and sound reveille at 6 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, you were up and you were... you carried your PT kit under your arm. That's what you had, sort of fatigues on. And we doubled up the hill, and we had an hour's physical training without any breakfast at all.
What type of physical training?
Well, it was really hard graft. You know, there was ropes and going over the horse, and we had these horrible Army Physical Training Corps people with the black and red striped jerseys who tweaked your nipples until you came off tips of your toes, you know. They first of all, they'd inspect, you know, you stood there with and you'd hold your hands out like that, and they'd look at your fingernails, they'd look at your teeth, they'd look at any stuff in the corners of your eyes, in your ears, you know, they and anything like that, and they would sort of torture you. It'd be lifted off the ground by your hair or by your nipples, you are a bloody manky boy, what are you? You are a fucking manky little... Yeah, so on. And you learned, in the end, to be very, very clean, and... They squeak, these people. They sort of, their voices squeak to me. And they really delighted in putting us through it. But in the end, you see, it formed a team spirit. I think this was the idea. You had no time to bully anybody because you were united against them, as it were.
Do you think they'd actually thought that out, or that was just an involuntary consequence?
I think that was one of the strengths of the regular army.
That they meant to do it?
Yeah, I think to develop a team spirit. Yeah.
So you'd have this hour's PT.
Yeah, now you go back.
That was on Shooter's Hill.
That was up towards Shooter's Hill, yes. It was a great big gymnasium.
And what then?
Then you'd double back again, and then you'd have breakfast. Oh. No, you'd shower, have breakfast. There's never seemed to be any time at all in between things. Then you'd dress in...
What about the breakfast? What would you get for breakfast?
Well, the thing I remember most was saveloys. So things like redskin sausages that were boiled and margarine and thick slices of bread and porridge.
Yeah. How did you cope with that sort of food? I mean, was it what you were used to? Or
no, it wasn't what I was used to, but somehow, you know, you're young and healthy and you ate it, you know. And Saturday night you'd go out into Woolwich with your five bob.
Hang on a minute, I'll come.
And
so you'd have your breakfast. Would you get enough for breakfast? I mean, would you still be hungry?
Yes, I think that there were gutsy people who'd sort of go up and ask and get more porridge or something. Yeah.
So you could if you want.
You could, yeah. There was always enough.
So after, and then you'd get dressed after breakfast.
Then you'd have to run back and get your putties and spurs and tunic, pressed and polished leather belt, cap, chin strap, badge, everything all gleaming, and go on parade then with a rifle. And then you were sort of marched and doubled up and down, and you learned how to drill, basically.
How did you take to drill?
I loved it, yeah.
Did you understand what it was for then? I mean, you might do now, but then did you?
No, but I suppose being kids, you know, most kids, well, in those days, used to like playing soldiers. You know, I suppose it was marvellous to learn how to sort of slope and present arms properly.
So how long would you be doing drill for?
That was an hour. Then it was usually perhaps education. There was always...
Now, you mentioned the education. What sort of level was it at for you?
Well, there was the... They call it Army First, Army Second. We all got the Army Second Class certificate, and we all left there with the Army Second Class certificate. Later on in India, I got a First Class certificate. You did English, map reading, maths, trigonometry, you know, quite a lot of useful things.
Was it at a higher level than you'd been doing at school, or the same, or lower? What?
I think it was higher, yeah, and more intensive. You know, you don't lapse your attention, you know. Something thrown at you with intent, you know. You had to work for it, and there was homework to do.
What about any lessons in the history of the regiment, the artillery?
Oh yes, there was regimental history. That's right. And for that we used to go up to the Rotunda Museum. That was a special.
Did they inculcate any sort of pride in the regiment? I mean, did it work?
Oh yes, it worked. I think, yeah.
Did you distinguish between the parts of the RHA, the garrison artillery, the rest of it, the field artillery?
Everybody's ambition was to go into the RHA because it was the elite, the right of the line, you know, cream. And some people did, actually. Well,
so that was seen while you were, that was an ambition while you were training?
It was a sort of ambition, yeah.
Now, so you do education in the morning, say, and then what would happen?
I'm not sure now whether it was mornings or afternoons. I know it was...
It doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, it doesn't, but it was non-stop, whatever it was. I think possibly it was riding school after the drill, because then initially you'd go up there with no spurs, just your breeches and putties, and you would... you'd blanket up, you'd just sort of put a blanket, folded blanket on the horse and surcingle, and you would ride without stirrups and round this big sort of peaked